Before you slip into unconsciousness, I'd like to have another kiss, another flashing chance at bliss, another kiss, another kiss.
Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Jim Morrison lived fast and died young, like some other notorious rock stars. The leader of the 1960s and 70s rock band The Doors is best known for songs such as Light My Fire, Riders on the Storm, People Are Strange. But you probably don't know him for his poetry, at least the kind that doesn't generally come with musical accompaniment.
It's the poetry and the final tragic days of Morrison's life that are the focus of the play The Lizard King. It was written in 1981, but hasn't really been on stage much in the last 30 years. That changes tonight in Milwaukee when KACM Theatrical Productions presents it at the Arcade Theater Underground Collaborative. We're joined by Max Tomaszewski, who plays Jim Morrison, Brittany Curran, who plays Pamela Courson, and Coy Wentworth, who plays Tom Baker, along with producer and director Ken Morgan. All three cast members are way too young for any firsthand knowledge of Morrison's story, so I wondered if portraying the real-life figures presented a daunting task.
It's been an interesting process, for sure, especially one of the interesting things is that if you, at least from my perspective, live theater, it's very much, you know, the actor brings themselves as well as whatever they're representing to the stage. And so it's really weird to play an iconic person and also have to kind of wed that with your own persona as a performer.
Be who you are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, that part is kind of intimidating. But as far as playing that character, I was just really excited to, because I really admire at least his artistic side, and especially the poetic side, which is one that's not explored as often.
Right. So, most of us know his song lyrics.
Right.
But we don't know his poetry.
Right. So mostly, like, I saw the casting notice, had a really good feeling about it, and then just started listening to the spoken word poetry, which I hadn't listened to that much before. And then just seeing if I could kind of mimic and understand what he was saying. And it just came very naturally. So I wasn't really that intimidated about being able to do it. But we still have to see how audiences, you know, whether they buy into the illusion or not.
Well, and how they react to his work, too.
Right,
it's been a long time.
And especially because it's, you know, not what a lot of people will be potentially expecting. They might be expecting Light My Fire, that kind of thing. So it's something totally different, too. It's not a Jim Morrison that most people even know about.
And so, Coy, you bring somebody to life on stage that a lot of people, unless they are Jim Morrison aficionados, don't really know about, and that is Tom Baker, who is a real person.
Yeah, he sure was.
And so tell me about him and the ways you're finding into his character.
Well, Tom Baker was, above all, an alcoholic and a drug addict. He was also an actor of sorts. He tried to make it big. He's probably best known for shooting I Am Man with Andy Warhol at the Factory. And that movie never really took off. It was famous for featuring Nico. It was actually a movie that Jim was supposed to do that Tom showed up for. I think the story goes that Jim sent him there.
Instead of
him going himself. I don't know why. Maybe he was hungover that day. He was basically someone who was tagging along, but also had his own scene. Very different scene at the time that he was hanging out with. He was more into the film circles, and he was a good friend of Norman Mailer. But yeah, like I said, he never really took off. And I think the reason a lot of people don't know about him is because he was so disruptive and didn't really have a whole lot of friends. The other members of the Doors weren't really too fond of this guy. The story goes he would get Jim into a lot of trouble. So he kind of pushed Jim to do things he may or may not have done anyway, but they kind of were a reckless duo of sorts.
Kind of a bad influence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you know, he's famous kind of for living in someone else's shadow. If you watch him on screen, you can kind of see why he wasn't too great of an actor. So I'm trying to bring that out and act as poorly as I possibly can in the best way possible.
In the best possible way that you can, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Brittany, who are you in this story? You are one of the trio here.
Yeah, Miss Pamela Courson, Jim's girl.
So are you finding the same thing, like these two were, this is a real person, and you
correct
have to find your way into who she was, but also you're acting.
Right, right. As Max said, you do have to insert yourself into that character as well, and I have found things about Pam that I can really relate to. It's difficult because there's more information about Jim Morrison than there is about Pam Corson. Some people probably don't even quite know about her. I found a lot of internet articles that would either speak of her as, you know, this sweet little redhead or the mean girl that broke up the doors. You know, just very, very stereotypical, small roles. Whereas what I like about the script is that it kind of rounds her out as a person. You know, she's a person. She's not just like this one little thing.
It was such an interesting relationship that they had. In the research that you guys did, you know, what did you find most interesting about this relationship?
They love to play games with each other. That was their big thing, was kind of pushing each other to the edge, to the point where sometimes it would get a little bit too serious. You know, it would be joking up to a point, and then it would just snap.
And get ugly.
Yeah. For sure.
And I think also, kind of similar to that, what Brittany started talking about and you bringing up Yoko, it's different because I feel like from what I read and what the script offers, she was much more integral and important to Jim becoming who he was and discovering himself artistically. Mm-hmm. She wasn't an obstruction. She was an enhancement.
Right. She believed in him, I think, more than anybody did. And a lot of people really believed in him, right? So she saw who he was as an artist before anybody else did.
And what about the poetry? Was that included, the poetry, not just the music?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was part of their courting process, so to speak. He would read his poetry to Pam. She was very encouraging about that. I'm not entirely sure it's confirmed, but I got the impression that she was a huge part of the reason why he went to Paris, why he decided to pursue this part of his artistic identity more. In a lot of ways, it's really sweet. And that's not always the side of things that you get with rock star relationships either.
How long were they together?
6 years. They were together 6 years. Although the first year is kind of iffy because, and this is brought out in the play, she was involved with Tom Baker shortly before or just about the time when she met Jim Morrison. The romantic rivalry between Tom Baker and Jim Morrison, and you got to remember, these guys were very close friends, but they were very competitive with each other. So the romantic rivalry between Tom Baker and Jim Morrison for the affections of Pam is brought out in this play.
So I'm going to bring you back on the microphone here and talk a little bit about your directorial process here, about how you're envisioning this evening that we're going to spend with Jim and Tom and Pam.
Well, when we first saw this script, we were almost at a loss on how to do it because so much of it is Jim Morrison reading his poetry. And we knew that we were going to have to bring this poetry to life on stage and bring the audience into Jim's poetry world, an alternate universe that Jim created for himself. And we experimented for a long time. We talked about puppets. We talked about projections. We talked about live actors wearing puppet-like costumes. What finally came in the end by the assets that we got was having our remarkable composer, Al Cooper, writing a rock and roll score to bring Jim's poetry to life on stage, along with the special effects. And the music becomes a sixth character in the play. As for directing the actors on stage, when you hire people as talented as we have, you don't have to do much directing. They find their own way if you set up the environment. And really, for the 14 months we were working on the production plan was to come to a proper environment.
So do you guys feel like you found your way? Is the environment good?
Yeah, I think we've definitely worked really hard to establish the distinct worlds that Ken was talking about. There's the poetry world of Jim's kind of own creative mind. Then there's him in Paris with Pam, and then also flashbacks to encounters with Tom Baker. You know, stepping between those worlds is kind of the part that is a little harder to define, and we're hoping to get that across to the audience. But I think that, yeah, we've definitely created unique worlds for each of these characters to inhabit.
Definitely. There's always questions coming into my mind with these people, and I still don't completely understand the levels of intricacy within their little love triangle and relationships, because there's still much more to explore. I think that people are going to walk away with more questions unanswered than answered, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's more about creating the environment of what the times were like. And I think that's what this show is really trying to do.
Has this play made the three of you more interested in that time period in both America and in Paris?
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I don't understand what y'all were doing back then. I'm just going to put that out here. And I think you guys ruined it for us because you guys had too much fun.
In a way. Max, for you?
I mean, I've always been really fascinated with this period of history, but I think always when you do these period pieces, it's really interesting how much it ties back into what's going on now. I think it's also been really interesting to realize, you know, how different things were, but also how they're kind of coming full circle, and we're dealing with the problems that a lot of the poetry is very prophetic of, particularly the course of American history and where it's gone since the time that he would have stated these things. And I think that's really fascinating that, you know, everything has its roots in the past.
Well, and as you say, everything comes around.
And it repeats again.
We're
still dealing with the same stuff. Yeah.
Well, and also you just made all of us feel very old by saying that this is a period piece. You do know that.
Yeah. Well, you know.
It is, though.
But it is,
it
of really course. Is, yeah. And, you know, and I'm just old enough to remember him. I was not listening to The Doors in the same way as I was listening to other people, but I was around and I certainly remember him, and I remember when he died and how big a deal it was. And that time was in some ways very innocent and other ways absolutely not, you know. And it's just fascinating that you're getting a glimpse into it through this play, you know, and then the rest of us will get to kind of either relive it or come to it fresh just like you did.
Right. That's a really interesting point that our audiences, particularly for this type of show, people our age are coming into it being transported to something that, you know, hopefully they'll find the same connections that we found and new insights based on that. And then there's other people who are going to come and relive it or probably discover. I feel like there was an interview where you talked about, Ken, how this play exposed parts of the 60s and 70s to you that you didn't even really remember.
Well, in 1971, I was 15 years old. I lived in a very remote town in Wisconsin, and all I knew of The Doors was from AM radio. Just about all that was available at the time was AM radio, yeah. Which to modern people would probably go, what? You know, that's all that was available to listen to music to, but really it was. So really I knew of their music, but I didn't find out much of the story until I got out into the big wide world.
Well, I want to thank all of you for coming in so late in the afternoon here to talk with us about it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Ken Morgan is producer and director of The Lizard King, which stars Max Tomaszewski, Coy Wentworth, and Brittany Curran. The play opens this evening at the Arcade Theater Underground Collaborative of the Plankinton Building of the Grand Avenue Mall.
Waiting.